7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 6 of Color of Magic, the podcast where we talk about magic news and do our part to try to lift up people of color in the magic community and in the gaming community in general. I am your host, Daquan Watson, and as usual, I have my trusty sidekick, Brian Allen, with me. How are you doing today, dude?
Am I one of those plucky sidekicks, or am I one of the speed? Just not Scrappy Doo,
that's up to you.
Just yeah, that's Scrappy up to Doo you. Is the main thing.
You're definitely better than Scrappy Doo, because yeah. I'll at least keep you on every episode. And then, because Scrappy had that weird thing where, like, occasionally he just wouldn't show up and nobody ever mentioned him. And then he just popped up later. So, yeah, we won't do that to you. If I don't have you on here, it'll probably be in case of emergency or something.
But, yeah, I'm doing well. How about you?
That's good, man. Because I'm going to need you for the long haul this week, because we got a lot of news we got to get.
Yeah, through. I've seen all this. Everything's banned.
So, yeah, man. You know, this week we had a whole lot of craziness happen. Oh, and you know, actually, you can hear it outside. You know what is?
It sounds like a band hammer.
That is a band hammer.
And it's busy.
So first week, you know, they told us with Pioneer that we were going to have bands coming every week effectively, or at least announcements every week until January. So the early part of the format was going to shake out really fast.
They're going to pop 3 cards a week every week? That's going to get old really fast. You're going to have 10 cards legal by the end of this.
We don't know. It could be 0. It could be 10. I mean, today it was 3. Or I guess yesterday, technically, it was 3. So on the list, we've got Felidar Guardian, which I think we all kind of sort of thought that was going to happen.
Yeah, the rumors have been out there.
Yeah, the card was banned before, so it's not that big of a surprise that it happened. Leyline of Abundance, though, I think is one that snuck up on people and wasn't on everyone's radar. However, with the ability to just power it out really quick with so many one-mana creatures in the format, plus you had Nykthos that lets you generate extra mana, you were able to do some pretty crazy things with it. So
yeah,
it didn't surprise
me. I get that one.
Yeah, it was just leading to some unfun games, I think. And I think that's one of the things they're trying to avoid early with this format. And then the third card was Oath of Nissa, which is a little unassuming, but I think between that and the other cards in the format, it was allowing you to play multiple colors pretty easy.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things they're wanting to avoid. Like, if you want to play 4 colors, you should really have to work for it if you're going to be splashing planeswalkers or whatnot in there.
Yeah, side effect has to be sometimes you just draw a hot garbage hand to balance things out. It just, that's the risk you got to take. Because once is still, you know, in the format, so once upon a time does enough, you know.
You can do some powerful things if there's a fail rate.
Yeah.
You can't just have it where it's like super consistent all the time on like turn 4, I'm going to do this thing and always have my cards. Like occasionally you should, you know, even with the Leyline of Abundance decks, like occasionally you would draw just the power draw, get all your stuff on the table, but then you still are just drawing lands or mana creatures because you didn't draw one of your payoffs.
Yep.
The downside to that though is you could still generate a lot of money or mana and just keep pumping your creatures.
That's a running joke in my play group, you know, when you get out all these powerful cards, except for the ones that actually hurt your opponent. Like, what does this deck do again?
Man, that's always embarrassing, too, when you're the one playing that deck.
Yeah, you're like, I do this. I take a 20-minute turn, and I go in with a pauper deck and kill you. What was your deck supposed to do again?
Oh, man, those are the worst ones in Commander, where somebody's sitting there, takes 15 minutes for their turn, they search out a couple cards, they draw 5 or 6 cards, they get another creature out, they search up another thing, and then just say go. It's like, dude, what was all that about? You know?
I just wanted to shuffle take that really
time,
badly.
Yeah, if you're going to take that time, just end the game. That's all I'm saying. Is like, once you're at that point, just end it. Otherwise, you're just wasting everybody's time. So, beyond the Pioneer bans, we have even more news. And we'd been so lucky to avoid it.
Oh, wow.
But we had spoilers.
Is Tom Cruise here?
I know.
Catherine Zeta-Jones ducking under some laser beams or something?
Man, here's the thing. Like, spoilers truly spoil fun.
Yeah.
And I get that people that are into the finance side of things kind of, I don't know if I'd say appreciate, but at least use this information. I mean, obviously with my job and everything else like this, information is important.
Yeah.
But I don't think we want it like this.
I'm not ready to bake for Theros yet. I'm still figuring out Eldraine. I'm not just, you know.
And I'm going to say this for our fans. Like, we will talk about the situation around the spoilers, but we are not going to address any particular cards, any particular abilities, anything we've seen on the cards. Like, they're out there if you want to go find them.
If you want to look at them, they're not hard to find.
Yeah, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. We get it. But there is something to the magic of a preview season and everything else that we don't want to be part of ruining.
It's like Christmas, you know? I mean, sometimes, you know, just trying to figure out what's under the tree is more fun than when you've opened it.
That's true. That's a good way to look at it. Sometimes that's part of the excitement. It's just kind of having things revealed little by little. Not even just about the actual content of what it is.
And angry, crotchety comedian side note, it's not time to bring the Christmas trees out yet. Primarily for my wife, really. It's not time for the Christmas trees yet, but they're coming out.
So, one of the things following the discussion around this, which I always find interesting, is people, the reason I had the music is people go like deep conspiracy theory on things, you know. And one of the things that people brought up this week was, is it possible that Wizards purposely spoiled these cards to draw attention away from all the bad Oko news?
That's the most
ridiculous thing. Like, there's no.
Can we get a tinfoil hat sound effect? That'll make no kind of sense.
Yeah, I wish I had one for like the crinkling hat or whatever. But the thing is here, like when people, this is, it's frustrating, right? When people say stuff like that, it creates all this conversation that goes nowhere to begin with. So it doesn't do any good to throw it out there. But the other is, you're making a statement that hasn't been thought through yet. Because I always ask them, like, what would be the real payoff for Wizards?
Yeah.
Like, you distract people from talking about a bad standard in Oko for, I don't know, 2 days? Maybe? Maybe three?
Yeah, 2 days would be generous. It didn't stop for 2 days on my timeline.
Yeah, they were only showing, or we've only seen, I hint, what, maybe 30 cards, tops? It's like, and they're mostly commons and uncommons or whatever. But for those of you who don't know, the person or people, I guess, who showed the pictures claimed that they purchased these boosters, I believe at a Walgreens somewhere.
That makes sense.
Now, because having the information I have and having done some of the work I have done, I want to keep it PG and I'm going to say we're calling bull crap.
Okay.
On this story. Partly because, no, I'll say this. Did the cards come out of boosters? Very likely, yes. Now, where those boosters came from is a whole different story.
In theory, would a Walgreens have access to the cards yet?
Not very likely.
Okay.
I would put the odds of that happening in the lower 5%.
Okay.
Probably even lower 2%. Mostly because of how stuff's printed and shipping and how people pay for stuff and what part of a quarterly budget certain things go on. Like, this isn't revealing anything at Wizards. This is just business. So when a company the size of Wizards or Hasbro goes to ship some things, especially something as big as Theros, those purchases are going to be made in the fourth quarter, and those will be counted on the fourth quarter budget because they have to be purchased then so they can be shipped and ready to release in Q1 for the different buyers, whether it's distributors, retailers, Walmart, whatever. For something to be opened now means it would have had to have been produced and paid for and shipped in Q3 that we just finished in order for them to have arrived in a Walgreens a couple weeks ago for somebody to have at least been able to get their hands on it and open it.
I'll be right back, y'all. I got to get run to Walgreens. My medication is not... gotta pick that up.
Yeah, so that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. The timeline doesn't line up correctly. So I've also been aware of some times where, and part of my job was to help, you know, keep things clean and communicate with retailers and whatever previously. And there are, I can tell you, there are multiple times things have happened, whether it's information getting out publicly or something showing up somewhere or cards leaving a warehouse when they weren't supposed to or whatever, like tons of things that happen that get dealt with regularly that the public never even knows about, which is fine. That happens. I mean, I think I told you off the air, I've had a friend who worked for, you know, M&M Mars and some of these other places, and occasionally they'll run contests or whatever. So you'll have codes or tickets or whatever inserted on some of the various products that they sell. Even they have had stuff leave their warehouses or attempt to be taken from the warehouses early, and things happen to people. But the public doesn't hear about that. Like, I only heard about it because I knew somebody who worked there. Otherwise, I would have never known that happened. Same thing happens at Wizards. So this isn't about Wizards not having good security or not having the proper things in place or any of this other stuff that people want to claim. This is just humans doing human things.
Yeah.
And whatever.
Again, as a former journalist, I'm still a journalist, essentially. I'm covering things here. When the more True. People that know a secret, the harder it is to... The White House, for example, can't keep things quiet. And I'm going to hopefully assume their security's slightly better than Wizards. I might be wrong, but I'm hoping they get better security.
I will say the difference is... Football and all. You have people at the White House actively working against the ability to keep those secrets. So probably not the best example. But I will say, now, all that aside, no idea where the packs came from. I don't believe it's a contrived thing from Wizards. I do believe...
I am going to Walgreens after this, though. No lie. When do they close? Yeah.
I will guarantee you are not going to find any at a Walgreens. Like... Even if that were to have actually been the case, they immediately would have gotten a phone call behind the scenes.
Yeah.
The proper people would have found out what was going on and taken things down until release day. So
I didn't know
your chance of finding any are already
magic.
Done.
They sell Magic at Walgreens? I wouldn't know where they were.
They do. I've seen them. Okay. I've seen them at some, selling Magic, Pokemon, some sports cards. Some aren't even recent sets. Some are, I want to say, one of the ones here I saw that had... a couple year old set. Is like, it was before Kaladesh, but I've just seen them in random stores.
I didn't think they were fresh out of the gate, you know, with the new hotness.
Sure. Now, the one thing to wrap this segment up, one of the things I will say is I would like to encourage people to not share that information when it happens. Partly because there is a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes at Wizards to roll out a new set. I mean, they literally have teams of people in marketing that sit around and try to decide, like, okay, what content creators are going to get to have preview cards. Then each of those content creators are going out and taking pictures and writing articles and creating videos. And people are putting in real time and effort to be able to have this, like, good release. Yep. And even podcasts. Among that. Yeah, exactly. Podcasts, too. But even with that, you have these people... these content creators, or even just websites that are generating revenue directly or whatever, that are now having a chance to lose customers because the thing they would have is no longer interesting. So people would go to these sites and some discover new people, whether it's your new favorite streamer or a new YouTube channel or a new website to buy cards or whatever. Like, those discovery moments are now lessened because somebody has put this other information out there. I mean, again, we won't talk about the cards, but some of the stuff being revealed has now stolen a moment from somebody.
Absolutely.
And I can tell you, when I was at Wizards, I believe it was when Ixalan happened. There were a couple of sheets that got released. People saw them. All the artwork was everywhere. Literally, people behind the scenes took, I want to say it was like across 4 days, to redo an entire preview season. Like, all their work for 3 or 4 business days was put toward finding a new way to preview the remaining cards and stuff in the set. And like, it was crazy. And this was like a few weeks out, you know? Wow. So it's like, yeah, but they didn't have a choice.
No.
Like, they changed all the like work at Wizards. So, and don't get me wrong, like, yes, there are things to like and dislike about Wizards, like any other company. But to have people complain about things is like, what you have to realize is stuff like this derails other work. Like, that's a big deal. So even though it seems very passive and non-problematic, like, it is a big deal, and it costs people a lot of money in various ways, whether it's hours, whether it's advertising, promotion, lack of direct sales on their websites, people, content creators not getting new fans, or people on their Patreons. Like, so many different ways it's costing people because somebody wants to put this out there and be first to market with some information for no reason other than like imaginary clout, I guess. I don't really know what they're doing. But anyway, that's that in a nutshell. That's our piece on it.
it's our first very special episode about leaks.
Yeah. And I like also having the opportunity to educate people about what goes on, because I don't think a lot of people get to see or hear about that. So, other news. Mythic Championship happening this weekend. There are already people. I see all the players in Richmond already. I almost said Roanoke. That's the wrong thing. In Richmond already sharing pictures and hanging out. So everybody's already in town waiting for stuff to happen. We pretty much just have one thing to talk about on this. And it's, yeah, you know, gee, where I'm going, right?
What could
is
that
it Oko
be?
Or no?
That's is it, he green right? And has like 12-pack abs?
Yeah, I mean, it's literally it. Like, it's just going to be, is it Oko or no? Like, now, I will say, I saw some people on social media claiming that they have a deck that beats Oko decks. We'll see. It's a damn good card, damn good deck, but yeah, we will see. I will tell you, I have a deck I've been working on Arena. It's a Jund deck. It's actually been handling the Oko decks.
Okay.
Downside is, I struggle with other Gruul type decks.
Yeah.
And
it loses red, to everything so else.
I don't know. Like, I mean, so maybe it's the same situation that if they get paired with Oko, I don't know, 8 out of whatever they play, you know, 10 rounds or something, then maybe, you know, but who knows? But there's really not a lot there. I think everybody's just going to be watching probably after you're past the first 3 or 4 rounds of Standard. If you're not looking at at least some reasonable number of non-Oko decks, I don't think people are going to tune into coverage for the rest of the weekend.
I do want to thank all the people that conceded just off of me dropping Oko, because we've discussed I'm terrible at Magic. I've had people concede in Arena just when they see the card, because they assume that bad. Like, no, I'm going to make many mistakes. You cost yourself a win in all likelihood.
You know what? You got to look at it like a sports team. You get to the end of the year, they're just going to see a win's a win.
Yeah.
That's true. It.
I'll take them.
So, next bit of news. Man, did you see all the announcements for 2020 with all the Commander stuff they're going to be doing?
That's going to be, I'm happy to see that this is going to be the year of Commander. It's exciting.
Yeah, and this is coming off of a weekend for Command Fest that both of them, I believe, sold out all 3 days.
Nice.
That's crazy.
And where's Command Fest going to be?
There was one in Seattle this past weekend, and also in Chicago were the two locations. I believe there's a third one coming up in the next week, maybe. There's another one coming up in the near future that I believe Star City is going to run out on the East Coast. So I would expect that one to sell out as well based on the other two.
Nice.
But yeah, so we're doing something different this time with Ikoria, which is going to be the set after Theros coming up. They're going to basically have a dual release. You're going to get the regular, I guess what we're calling draft boosters now. So you're going to have the regular set release. And then you're going to get a full Commander release with 5 decks alongside it.
I like it.
That's a lot. I don't know how that's going to go over. I don't know if it's good or bad. I don't know if people who would normally buy boosters are just going to buy their decks for Commander, or does that make some of the cards from the boosters more valuable because fewer boosters are getting cracked? Like, there are so many things that are unknown with this type of release.
Well, I wonder, and you, I'm sure, probably have some idea. How many people are there, would you say, or some percentage that only play Commander? Is it a pretty...
It's large. I couldn't even tell you the actual number, but it is quite a few. I mean, I can say it when I go like to... Yeah, I can say when I go to pretty much any convention where I'm working or doing a speaking engagement or whatever, or any Grand Prix, or even honestly, even most stores I visit, there are some players that only play Commander these days. They don't play any 60 card formats of any kind.
And I mean, that's actually cool. You know, that there's a format that has become that popular.
Oh, yeah, it's been popular. One of the interesting things I was looking at and trying to consider is just how this changes Commander, right? Just adding all these cards constantly, or powerful cards, like change the format drastically. Are they able to take the format in a different direction because you have more opportunity to play around with stuff and more weird things that the actual commanders can do? And one of the neat things, because somebody said, like, why is Wizards, do you think, focusing so heavily on Commander for a year? And one of my thoughts was that right now, if you're Wizards of the Coast, I would think you look at kind of just the customers you're serving and the customers you're not, like most businesses would, so you can find gaps in your market. In reality, Commander players only have to buy one release from Wizards a year. They buy their four Commander decks, spend their like between $120 and $150 or so or whatever, and get their four decks. So if you have a part of your customer base that technically still has money to spend, it's probably the Commander players.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't blame them for it. It's at least worth trying. But yeah, we're going to have the five decks with Ikoria. Then we're going to have two more decks that release with Zendikar in the fall. And then come December, there will be an end of year. Well, they said Q4, but that's usually going to probably be our December release. Is a Commander booster pack. Now, my understanding is from the announcement, it's supposed to be 20 cards per pack, a foil in every pack, at least two legends in every pack, and the set itself is going to have 70 new legends. Sorry.
I was hyped for 7, and you said 70. Okay. Now I'm...
Yes, 70.
Now I'm squealing. I won't do that to the microphone, but I'm in my head, I'm squealing.
Yeah, so this is going to be really exciting for a lot of people. And I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a crazy time for the players. I think it's cool that casual players are getting a bunch of cards next year. I think it's going to be cool from a Magic Finance side, because typically a lot of cards that get printed in these Commander products don't have a lot of opportunity to appear in other products. So a lot of stuff from those sets tends to hold value for a while. So this is going to be really interesting.
Do you feel like there's just a lot less, you know, tendency to burn out or get frustrated among Commander players, I guess, because it's more casual?
In general, that's probably true, because I think part of what comes with playing Magic regularly, if you're going to tournaments, if you're trying to prep to make Mythic and be in the top 1,000 in Arena or whatever, is there's a lot of time you have to dedicate to prep and practice. Whereas when you're playing casually, all right, you may not have time. You don't put any thought into your Magic stuff until you go to your local store and you're like your Wednesday night or a Sunday afternoon or whatever. And that in itself can prevent burnout. So yeah, you're probably right.
That's going to be some riveting, exciting stuff. And more. More news, Q. Mm-hmm. There's more news?
Well, this isn't so much news as it brings up an interesting thing. We previously, about a month ago, I believe, got told about this mystery booster.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody really knows what it is, and everybody's been speculating. And I had multiple people ask me, like, what do I believe the mystery booster is? Now, assuming it's actually a booster pack from a booster product, which was my assumption, who knows? It could have just been a fancy thing to show, but the product's an actual, like, I don't know, boxed product of some kind. But going under the assumption that's an actual booster, my thought was something that's Commander-centric, because that would make sense for an end of year. It'd be something those players would buy. It would make everybody happy kind of in general to have this product exist. However, now we're being told at the end of next year we are getting a Commander-centric booster.
Yeah.
So now I have no idea what it is.
We were counting on you, man. You told us about Everclave. We figured you'd have this. We were ready for.
Yeah, you got me. I don't know what it is at this point, but we will find out. Well, by the time this goes live, we will have found out. So they're supposed to announce it on Thursday. And I believe that's going to be part of just kind of the Mythic Championship coverage. And it's something to talk about leading into the event. So we will find out. I think it's going to be interesting, though, whatever it is. Actually, what are you hoping it is? I think is a good question.
Oh, God. I am completely unsure. I was looking to you, man. Like you said, Commander was a possibility. But if we're you don't think they would do it, too. I wouldn't think that quickly, but then.
I mean, they still might. I'm not saying it's not that anymore, yeah. But who knows? It's. I don't know. I think whatever it is will probably be interesting. They're rolling out
secret Oko bullet. Something that just.
Well, that would make everybody happy. But no, apparently they've been signing up events for it or whatever. So people will get to play in an event with this mystery booster that we don't really know what it is yet. But hopefully it's fun and exciting for the people who signed up for it.
Which is totally fun, but I know especially high-level Magic players like to be like Batman. They like to have try to have a plan for everything. And for this, you can't. So it's, I'm sure it's
and that's fun, the thing.
But they're also probably like pulling some fingernails out, I would think.
That's the thing, though. I kind of like getting back to this thing where we don't know everything.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, like, in my current position, like, yes, between my job and the podcast and everything else, like, having that information does make my life a little bit easier. But there's part of me that I think comes back, like your analogy of just like waiting for Christmas Day, you know, like, there's still something fun and exciting about that, to find out about a thing like the day we get to know about it and we didn't know anything leading up to it.
And in the age of the internet, that's harder and harder to get, where, you know, you look at the leaks and just everything seems like we know at least a little something about before it hits us. So this goes back to the days where, you know, you had to look at magazines, you know, before we had all the internet and the forums, and you had to wait to hear word of mouth what the new hotness might be. The good
old
days.
Too, like, and it can still happen, right? Because I don't know how many of our listeners read comic books, but they had this story in Marvel that was a crossover story called The Secret Invasion.
Oh, yeah.
And you may have heard about this.
Yeah.
So there was this whole plot that the Skrulls were basically coming back and infiltrating and trying to take over the Earth, because, you know, that's what happens.
That's how they roll.
But what was crazy about it is this was a thing that they had in motion for, what, something like 5 years of real time?
Yeah.
And then started hitting it real hard 3 years before the thing actually happened. So what's wild is, as the story was coming together, there were books I read, like miniseries, that like had things happen that were affecting the story. And there were things that like the characters did that you sort of just wrote off as being like, oh, this is just comic book stuff. Yeah. You're like, oh, crap, that person was a Skrull or whatever. Like,
now it makes sense.
Yeah, the fact that even Marvel has those issues and they were somehow able to keep a secret for now. I don't know if they had like NDAs that like if you said something, you get murdered. Like, I don't know. But
the Punisher comes to your house. But it can happen. He's real. That's a secret you have to keep also.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, I have faith that these moments can still happen in entertainment products. I don't think we have to be beholden to the news and release schedule the way we've been doing it. That's all.
Preach, my brother, preach. Hey!
Hey!
Sounds like somebody's
here. That's awesome. So, let's check and see who's at the door, because today, I think we have an actual... This is cool, right? So... this person is a competitive player,
awesome.
Also a cosplayer. So the first cosplayer we've had on the show.
Yeah.
More importantly, our first woman guest we've had on the show. And they even work at a card shop, or actually a game store to be more specific. So they're going to have some really fun insight for this conversation. Yeah. So
that will
let's
be a
introduce everybody.
Question, folks.
Yeah. Let's introduce everybody to Vanessa. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, I'm glad you had time to come talk to us. Like, I think this is going to be a very fun discussion.
Yeah, I'm excited to share what I think is unique insight. I feel like there's not a lot of people that do what I do on a daily basis.
I think you're right. So actually, why don't you tell us a little bit about kind of how you even got started with Magic?
It's kind of a weird story. So I've always been interested in card games. So I've been playing card games since I was about 15, but I didn't play Magic. And I started playing Yu-Gi-Oh! And I was a competitive Yu-Gi-Oh! Player for many, many years. And then I got burnt out on the game and wasn't playing card games for about a year. And I had a friend tell me, hey, I have a friend and he's opening a card shop. He needs someone to work for him. And then she said that she thinks I would be a good fit. And I was looking for a job change. And he messaged me and was like, okay, yeah, you can have the job, but you have to learn Magic because we're mostly going to focus on Magic. And then I was like, okay, thinking like it's just going to be for a job. But I tried it out and the card itch came back and I got obsessed. And here I am still playing Magic. So it's been a while and I'm still addicted.
How long ago was that?
Almost 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah. So that's cool. And it's funny because that's very much like a necessity is the mother of invention kind of thing.
Yeah, I kind of swore off card games and been like, I play card games and it takes over my life and it's all I do and I'm not going to do it anymore. And here I am.
I think we're all familiar with that cycle.
Yeah, I jokingly tell people like nobody really quits Magic. You just kind of go on hiatus for a while.
Every time you think you're out, they keep dragging you back in.
Yeah, exactly.
Some new release, you're like, ooh, what's this? And here you are again.
Yeah, and kind of to sidetrack a little bit, Vanessa, you mentioned you played Yu-Gi-Oh! And you got burnt out on it. Like, was there a particular thing that kind of just wore you out on that game? Because, like, I know whenever I was one of the big TOs for it, we were running events and we constantly had, like, lots of theft and there was just, like, lots of issues in that community that were just causing problems.
Besides the, like, kind of bad rep the community gets. I agree. The Yu-Gi-Oh! Community has a lot of problems, a lot more so than the Magic community with like stealing and just toxic people. But the main thing that got me, since I mostly focus on competitive play, and I always had a tier one deck playing meta. I would go to like four tournaments a week and I was a sponsored player. Like I was on a team. It was very much like my whole life. And the thing with Yu-Gi-Oh! Is that there's only one format and you can use every card besides the ban list. So it creates really, really bad formats. Imagine if every format was Oko format, but worse. That's what I lived through for like 6 years. And that's why people tell me like, oh, Oko, the format's so bad. And then I'm just like, I've been through this. I can work with it. Not that I enjoy it, but like I'm used to it.
No, I get what you're saying. Oko. For a lot of players that don't know, like in Yu-Gi-Oh! They have a ban list or a restricted list, but that even rotates regularly, which is kind of weird. And on top of that, like, because, you know, Vanessa's right, there's largely one format. I mean, there's technically another, but most people just play one. And because of the way the game's built, there's no restriction on, like, how you cast a card or whatever. So if a card's good, every deck plays it. So if you look at tournament lists for that game, oftentimes 15 cards of a list will be the same, or sometimes even 20 cards are the same between each of the decks, because those are the best 20 you play right now. So it's not the most fun environment, to say the least.
I can see where that would get agitating.
It's basically if you lived through Oko format or Teamer Energy format for 5 years straight and then gave up. I lasted a while.
Yeah, that's true. You were grinding it out way more to go to four events a week. I don't know if I could have done that. So in addition to learning Magic and playing Magic, because I was doing my homework, I saw that you were a fairly serious cosplayer, too.
Yeah, I've been cosplaying for a long time as well, about 10 years, but only recently that I started playing Magic that I started cosplaying Magic characters. I used to do like a lot of like anime characters or like comic book characters, but then I saw Magic and then I wasn't cosplaying a lot anymore, but then I was inspired by a lot of like the characters in Magic, and especially like Vivian and Whatley and just like women of color that I've just never seen in a fantasy sense, and it really just inspired me to try to portray those characters in ways that like I feel like would be special for me. I'm not sure. It made me really happy to see those characters and I wanted to portray them.
I think that's a very serious thing you kind of touch on there. And we talked about it a little bit I believe like two episodes ago when I was telling people about like when they were doing the initial test of artwork for what they wanted to show of even Vivian, you know. So when you were coming from a different game to Magic, like how did that artwork kind of speak to you or touch you differently than what you saw in other games?
When I first started playing, Almonkhet was starting to come out, and then Kaladesh was out is when I first started playing, and I saw like the whole Kaladesh aesthetic that was like Indian inspired with like steampunk elements, and I thought that was super unique and awesome. And then I saw Ixalan and Almonkhet, and I was just like, wow, I've never seen like this vast array of people that look so different, and it was just not something that I was used to, and it really hooked me with the game. It was like a really big aspect of why I kept at it and just kept playing, because I really loved the artwork and I wanted to know more and I wanted to read the lore and I just wanted to see what was going to come next.
So even beyond just costuming, like that was motivation for you to even just stick with the game and the product.
Yeah, I was like halfway into it up until Ixalan, and then Ixalan just really, like, I fell in love with that set, and then I just been 100% in it since Ixalan. I just love the Mesoamerican themes, and well, like the cards themselves too, and like the tribal elements, but I've never seen any game or any like just fantasy anything with like people of color like that, especially like my heritage. I'm Hispanic, and there was like Mesoamerican theme, but like it's basically like Aztecs that live with dinosaurs. I thought that was so unique and awesome. It made me so happy.
Everything's better with dinosaurs, isn't it? Really? For honest
Heck about yes.
And I think that's cool to see, you know, people respond positively to these efforts that are happening. You know, I think for as much as we want to knock Wizards and as much as we want to complain about the Oko situation and all this other stuff, like there's a lot of these other things and these other, I guess, just like positive acts that are happening that we still should be taking time to acknowledge, because, you know, taking the idea of something like Ixalan meant a ton to somebody like Vanessa that now has given us another positive person to have in our gaming community that we wouldn't have had otherwise. So it's very cool that stuff is happening. One of the other things I want to ask you, Vanessa, is like, do you see that resonating with other women or women of color that you know?
I feel like it does, but most people still don't know about it. It just seems like women don't really think that Magic or card games is like something, a space for them. It doesn't seem like something that they want to do. I don't know. It's just so, but when I do show like family members, my sisters, my cousins, like, hey, look at this game I play. Look at the artwork. This is the story. And they get super excited when I show them, but it's like they don't really get the opportunity to discover it on their own, I feel.
So that's interesting. So if I'm interpreting what you're saying, it's like, it's awesome these efforts are happening, but they could do a better job of promoting it or using that in their promotion so people see it and make it more visible.
Yeah, it's just, I feel like women are a smaller percentage of Magic players, and it's just kind of harder for them to get that first look at those artworks and people and really get hooked. There needs to be more people showing them these things and introducing them to games and just nerdy things in general.
Oh, sure. You know, and actually, I'd like to kind of touch on that, too. When, you know, because you're a competitive player, so you're obviously going to tournaments. How do you feel the reactions are that you get being a competitive player and being a woman in those environments where, you know, as we've pointed out before in the show, you're talking about less than 5% of the competitive population are women?
Yeah, so it really depends on where it is. If it's like a local store where everyone knows me, it's not really a big deal. But if I go to like a Grand Prix or a tournament that's where no one knows me, it just feels like people kind of assume that I don't know what I'm doing. Wow. Or that like they question why I'm there. Like, for example, the last Grand Prix that I went to that I was in the main event, there was a player. It was during I was playing Black Red Aggro back when like it was like Chandra and Heart of Kieran, that whole format. Anyways,
oh, yeah.
And there was also a mono red deck that was popular, and I was playing against a mono red player, and then he proceeded to like explain how his cards worked because he was assuming that I didn't know how they worked, and it was just mono red. And he was like, and like, I hate it when people call me like sweetie or like people are just they think they're being nice and they're like explaining their cards to me. It just feels so just demeaning, and it's happened quite a few times, and it's just like it feels so bad.
Mansplaining and magic.
That's embarrassing for me as a dude. Like, okay, so I'm gonna PSA for a second here, guys. If you're playing against anybody who's non-male identifying, do not take the time to treat them as though they are not an equal for any reason. Like, assume that they too have done their homework and they know what cards are and you know what the format is. Like, if they don't know, they will ask. They will reach over and check your card out, or they will say, hey, would you mind explaining a thing? And then feel free to do whatever. But like, that's just so ignorant to me. And honestly, if you're going to call somebody sweetie, like, that makes me want to just like say something to a dude whenever I hear that. But a way to check yourself is if you're about to say something, ask yourself, would you also say that to a man?
Exactly. Like, yeah.
If the answer is no, you probably shouldn't say it. That's all. Just think about it. You know, think before you speak. Message. But yes, I think that's very unfortunate, because I believe, Vanessa, that you are just a more driven player, obviously, having slogged through, like, coming up through Yu-Gi-Oh! And the difficulties that has.
Yeah, getting my start in Yu-Gi-Oh! Feels like I've been to hell and back, and I'm ready for anything.
But yeah, but that's the thing, right? Like, if another woman is playing and doesn't have that mentality, for whatever reason, like, she's going to be less likely to want to come back to another event, I would think.
Yeah, I feel like initially tournament environments and just competitive magic in general is kind of intimidating if you are not prepared. I was prepared because I had that background and I had people that helped me. But if I'm just someone that, like, for example, got started with Arena and then steps into a card store and wants to kind of take it one step further, I think those people that go there are going to be intimidated at first, especially with, like, if you're a girl by yourself and you go to a card store and you see there's no other girls, and then you don't know anyone, and then maybe someone is weird or they say something that makes you feel uncomfortable, like, you're not going to come back and it's not going to continue.
Now, thinking about, you know, obviously outside of events, like, you still do other stuff as far as like streaming, you're visible on social media, on Twitter. Like, how does the rest of the Magic community outside of competitive events, like, respond to you? And how supportive or not would you say they are?
I feel like if it's another public person or they're very nice and just welcoming and just super supportive of everything I do. But in the past, for example, I was one of the people invited by Wizards to go to the Mythic Invitational. And when the announcement came out, it was kind of... I got singled out because I replaced Amaz. They're like, well, Amaz is not going to be able to make it due to visa issues, but Nessa Meow Meow is going to replace him. And so that kind of put me under the spotlight for like a week or so by the Magic community. And a lot of people on like Reddit or just anonymous platforms were just saying kind of mean things. And I feel like if they have that anonymity, they were more likely to say negative things. Like, there were so many people, like, the main thing that really just kind of made me feel kind of down on myself was some people were saying that I was just affirmative action, and that really hurt me.
Oh, man. Like, okay. That's...
Again.
Yeah.
You wouldn't say it to somebody's face. just why would you say it behind the keyboard? But that's welcome to the internet.
And here's the thing. Like, I'm not going to say... Like, obviously, like, you are competitive. You have been trying. Like, you know, there are other reasons you got selected. And you've also been present on social media and you've been streaming and whatever. So there's other reasons Wizards had to look at you. But at the same time, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to make sure there's more representation. Like, if somebody's going to be mad just because it's like, oh, well, we thought maybe having an additional person of color, and for that matter, a woman of color, was going to be a positive thing, they're not wrong.
Yeah, I agree that there should be more, there should be promotion of people of color and just minorities in general in like these big platforms for more visibility. But I feel like a lot of people that have that mentality that they're like, oh, you're just affirmative action, they don't really like kind of see the merits that I have besides that. And I feel like a lot of like it takes me like double the effort of other people to kind of prove that I'm worthwhile, that I have other skills other than like just presenting who I am. And like I have to like prove myself everywhere I go for people to see like, oh, you're not just a cosplayer, you're not just a girl.
Like, what you bring up is a very good point. And this kind of comes back to a conversation I've had with some people recently, that I think what people have to understand is when we talk about things like privilege, it's not even so much about what you've been given as much as the hurdles you haven't had to push through or the roadblocks you haven't had to fight through to get the exact same thing. You know, I think sometimes people can say, oh, well, you have privilege. It just means, oh, well, I wasn't given everything, so I didn't have privilege. It's like, yeah, but you didn't have to deal with this type of stuff that Vanessa's had to deal with just because your skin was a different color.
Message. You don't get, hey, sweetie, this is how Red Deck Wins works. You haven't had to deal with that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I think that's something that kind of goes unspoken or maybe even just misunderstood sometimes is...
Yeah, and it still happens since I work at a card store also, I'm one of the main people that know magic, and people are just assume that I don't know magic. They'll ask, do you know magic? Well, and to my male coworkers, they'll straight up ask them, like they assume that they already know. Like I have a coworker and he specializes in Pokemon, and magic players that walk in, they'll just assume he knows about magic. And like, they'll assume that I don't know, and I have to prove myself. I have to, you know, show them my DCI number, show them, like, I have to prove myself instead of just people assuming that I know what I'm doing. And that's the biggest thing that frustrates me.
Yeah, sadly, I've seen that too often. Also, like I said, having run a store for so long and even run events for a long time, just trying to, like, get people to understand that, like, other people of the opposite sex can enjoy gaming just the same. Like, women still find competition interesting. They still want to dive deeper in the lore on things. Like, there's nothing that says you can't equally be interested in magic the same way that Brian and I can. So, like, it's weird to even have that mindset to start with. And the tough part is, like, it starts somewhere. I don't know where, but it starts somewhere, and people learn this behavior, and I wish we could just keep them from learning it to begin with. Yeah.
Well, when you talk about people complaining about like affirmative action on the Pro Tour, it's very rarely anybody, you know, it's very rarely a player of substance making these complaints. It's somebody ranked Infinity. They weren't going to get chosen, but they're the one that's complaining about it.
That's true. I would say that the majority of the people I know that are competitive, or the few people I communicate with that are in like the MPL or whatever, they didn't have as big of a problem with it. The only issues they seemed to have was early on when they didn't really know kind of how the points were going to stack up and what the future of Magic was going to be at the competitive level. They were kind of concerned that, like, okay, somebody who hasn't put in time to earn their spot might end up with an advantage over somebody who is. And like, and that's at least somewhat of a relevant argument. Like, if we're going to have that discussion, fine. Now that they kind of know where everything is and like, invitationals are like a once a year thing, like they don't seem to have as much of a problem with it anymore. And they're actually tend to be more largely supportive of those efforts.
Yeah. And I was talking to Javier Dominguez for a while during I was invited also to Mythic Championship 3. And I had a conversation with him about invitees and people being upset that there are people that were invited instead of earning their spot via traditional means to these big events. And he said that he really liked that there were people being invited in that were for minorities, or for the invitations were for just whatever X reason that Wizards feels like that person should be there. And he was telling me that he feels like he has a lot of privilege, and that a lot of people, he's from Spain, and he said there's a lot of people that I feel like maybe are as good as me or more, or
better than me. And the reason why I'm here and the reason why I became the player that I am and on the MPL is that I have the privileges of having the resources to travel to the US and get those pro points. And I had the resources to be able to travel. And that's the reason why I'm here. And it's like we have to uplift these people that don't have the same privileges as other people do.
Man, I always hear so many positive stories about him. I think he's a person.
He's just a wonderful person.
I have not heard one thing ever negative about that guy. Like, I would love to have him on the show at some point. And it's awesome that he was even willing to reach out to you, who on like a global scale is still relatively unknown by comparison, and still give you those words of encouragement.
Yeah, I've gotten to meet him and most of the MPL since I was invited to those big events by Wizards, and kind of the Spanish speaking players kind of bonded, I feel, in these events, like me and Javier and Menguchi and Salvato, and just the Spanish speaking people kind of had our own little chit chat in Spanish, and it was really wholesome. I had a really good time.
You know, and I think that's the thing too. I think sometimes people, we'll say like mostly whites that are non people of color, can sometimes feel like there's an effort being made to like alienate them. But the reality is like sometimes just finding somebody that relates to you is all that's happening. Like, if you go to an event, like if I go to an event and there's some other black people there and they're talking about a certain thing or they're like having a moment that you can relate to, you kind of go over and share in that moment with them because it's familiar. It's
yeah. And especially you don't get those moments very often, and you kind of take hold when you can. And you see those small chances.
I think you're right. Like, it's just, especially when you're in the middle of a big event and there's kind of like a lot of stress and stuff that's happening, sometimes you just tend to gravitate toward what's familiar or people that literally speak your language, you know, sometimes. Like, and it's one thing too, like, I've always thought the couple of opportunities I had to play on the Pro Tour were always interesting, just to see the different mixes of culture and see everybody in the same room. And that's one of the few events where, I guess, partly because of the way the event's designed, like, you see people from all over the world, you see people from all the different cultures, and they're all kind of sharing in moments together. And it's, sometimes I wish there was a way to kind of like take those moments and feelings and share them with people at other regional events or Grand Prix or whatever, and go like, if you're not a jerk, this is how it can be. I promise.
I see an upcoming segment. If you're not a jerk, I don't know who will get to sponsor it, but it could be great. That'll be our version of The More You Know.
Yeah, exactly. So, Vanessa, since we got you here, and we have you captive, technically, I guess you can hang up at any point. But we're going to hit you with our next segment, which is Five Fire Questions. Our guests tend to be very sharp, but let's see how they respond when we put their feet to the fire in Five Fire Questions. Cool. So my first question is, we talked a lot about Magic for you, but what is your favorite cosplay costume that you've ever done?
By far, I had the most fun wearing Saheeli Rai. That was my most recent one that I wore at Grand Prix Las Vegas this year. And I had a lot of fun wearing it. And I got a lot of really awesome reactions from fans.
I can imagine that was a chance for a lot of photo ops for people.
Yeah. A lot of people came up to me and were like, "You're my commander." And they were just so excited. That's awesome. I would take a selfie with them.
I've never heard that. That's such a cool, like, compliment to happen, and just like, "Oh, you're my commander," and be like, "Okay,
yeah,
cool."
It's kind of weird, but like it was really nice.
So did you get to sign cards or anything for people?
I think I signed like a few playmats. I don't think I signed any cards.
That's still pretty cool, awesome, though. Like, to get recognized from your costume to be able to like still make these people happy in a different way.
Yeah, most people recognize me from my streams, since a lot of the connections I've had with Wizards came through my Twitch stream, not really my cosplay, since I don't cosplay that often, since I tend to focus more of my time on competitive Magic. That's like my main focus, and then I'll sprinkle a costume here and there and wear those a few times a year during big events.
That's cool. But how long does it take you for something like your Saheeli costume, which was really nice? Like, how long does it take you to put something like that together?
That one took me about a week, but it was a lot of hours spent, and like the day before I like didn't sleep. I kind of left it till the end.
That is literally like the mantra of every person I know that's a cosplayer.
Yep.
Just like, oh yeah, I put in like 6 months, but then like the 2 days before, I think I put in like 15 hours.
Wow.
Like, oh God.
Basically.
So next question. What's your favorite event you've ever been to? Being a competitive player, I'm sure you traveled to a few things. Like, what's your favorite event, or I guess even location that you've been to?
I think it was the Mythic Invitational in Boston for PAX East at the beginning of this year. That event was just completely magical. Wizards went the extra mile to make us all feel like legit VIPs, and I've never had that sort of like experience where like we had our own lounge. They like provided us with a bunch of swag. Like the whole thing was comped. Like they rented out like the super fancy club and had like open bar for like all of the MPL and all the invitation peoples. And then they gave us like, I could go on and on. I will not. It was just a magical experience and super, super fun.
That's cool. You know, I think a lot of people always wonder, because I will tell you from just watching it on stream and on YouTube, like, and on Twitch, it was really cool visually. So it's cool to know that that translated to the players and stuff that were present there. Kind of,
yeah, we were all just starstruck and like just completely going wow every 3 seconds at everything that was going on.
That's neat. I think that's really cool. And it's also neat to see that Wizards was making those efforts to try to make the events bigger and better, even just from the player perspective. Because I think at the end of the day, there's going to be so much that goes on from like a consumer side, but you know, the people that you have there are the ones that are going to go and evangelize it for you after the fact. So that's very, very cool to see that happening. Then my final question is, because again, you're a gamer, you've played for a while. We all have these moments. What's the most embarrassing thing you've ever raged out about while playing a game?
I think on stream, it was a while ago, but it was on stream, and then earlier that stream we were joking about like, oh haha, I'm not a scrub, I would never do this. And we were talking about using thought erasure and then picking a what's the name of the four drop?
It's a Nullhide Ferox.
Yes, I've had that Nullhide Ferox. Yeah, like, oh, it would be so hilarious if you did that. And literally like 2 hours later into the stream, I did it. Like, as not a joke, like, I did it on accident. And then it dropped on the board, and I turned so red, and then all of chat was just, like, laughing. And I was, like, I turned red, like, I couldn't even talk, I was so embarrassed, and my chat just talked about it for, like, a month straight, and they would not let it go.
Those are the moments on screen
for what it's worth,
never forget.
Nope.
Yeah, I'm always the green player, and I cannot tell you, I more than I can count, the number of times I've had an opponent make me discard a Ferox. I don't know why. Like, in each time it happens, I'm like, oh, they must have a way to deal with it or something. And then, like, three turns later, they're just dead. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
that
was
weird.
It was just even worse because we were joking about it earlier in the stream, and then I did it, and it was just so bad.
Okay, that's a pretty good one.
It is.
Brian, hit her with your two questions.
All right, as we talked a little bit earlier about Yu-Gi-Oh! And some of the fun experiences you had over there, if you could trade banish one Magic card to the land of Yu-Gi-Oh! Who are you sending away to Yu-Gi-Oh! Never to return?
I'm going to pick Nexus of Fate.
That's a good one. I ain't even going to be mad about that one.
No hate for
that. I hate that card so much.
Do you have to shout it out now like in Yu-Gi-Oh! 4? Nexus of Fate! It's all dramatic.
I'm not looking forward to facing that card in Pioneer.
Oh, you're right. That is still part of that format.
Oh, everyone's like, oh, it is. Here we go. Oh, groans.
Yeah, fortunately, groans. I haven't seen that happen yet, but you're right. It's probably going to happen at some
but
point.
But I heard they're banning like 12 cards a week.
It's
going to
be absolutely terrible.
So it'll be fine, right?
Yeah, that's true. If it annoys people, well, we just have to wait a week.
Right.
Cool. What's your next question, Brian?
Talking cosplay. If there's one celebrity that you could talk into doing a cosplay, hopefully, they've celebrity would call you to call, who would it be and who would you get them to cosplay?
This is a damn good question.
Yeah,
dude.
This is, I have to pick a really good answer. I'm going to say I would want, to see Ariana Grande as Saheeli. I think that would be
That is interesting.
That is a damn good answer. Like, man, applaud for both of y'all.
And Ariana's somebody that might actually do it. She loves, you know, any kind of elaborate costume, really.
I would love
to. I don't know if she plays magic, but hey, we'll have our people call her people.
Well,
there's so many celebrities that you don't even know and they randomly just play magic.
I know.
So many of them, like, not even just play magic, so many of them are gamers. Like, there's several that we've been talking about that, like, are D&D players, or they play, like, Fortnite or whatever. And, like, it's so funny to, like, slowly be discovering this.
Yeah, you never know.
So as we get bigger, maybe we'll get some of them on the show. So, yeah, since we have you here and you survived the five fire questions, we kind of want to invite you in to just sit down at our table and have a little more serious discussion with our dinner table talk, if you're up for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this week, and we kind of talked about this a little bit off the air, was that our topic this week is about just the lack of Hispanic culture we see in our gaming community, and particularly the Magic community, in some of these events and tournaments and whatnot. And then kind of along with that, just the lack of women of color in general that we're seeing, you know, because for our listeners that know, I lived in Texas for a long time. I grew up in South Texas. You know, I ran a store in Waco for a long time. And even then, there wasn't a large representation among the Hispanic population and definitely not among women of color. I mean, thinking about either my store or my playgroups, we may have had at most at any given point, maybe two, you know. Yeah. And you're talking about living in a place that has a very large Hispanic population. And, you know, same thing for you, Vanessa, being in California. You know,
yeah, so, Southern California near Los Angeles.
Yeah, so what's it like in your store as far as, like, the demographic makeup and whatnot?
The majority of players are white, even though the general population around the store is predominantly Hispanic. So that, I think the trends kind of keep on there. I've seen, in terms of women of color, I've seen, like, very, very few. And I work there, so I see the people that come in every day. And I've seen maybe total in 3 years, five Hispanic women, like, play a game. Like, walk in, yeah, I don't know if they play, they'll walk in, walk out. But just actually sitting down, playing any sort of format anywhere, like, maybe five. And, like, black girls, I've seen maybe three, four. Like, it's just so dismal compared to the rest of the community around us.
You know, and it's funny that that's so consistent from place to place. So it's definitely a larger issue, and it's not localized, you know, because even in my store, I had several customers that fit the demographics we're talking about, that they may come in and buy something or they may pick up a board game or whatever. But to actually be involved with, we'll just say, be involved with strangers or as part of a new gaming community, or being able in a situation where you're going to interact with unknown people, they're just not interested. You know, so I guess my question to you is, being both a woman and woman of color, like, what are some things you think we could do as a community? Because obviously me and Brian are men and we're stupid and we don't know how to fix this problem. So, like, what would you recommend, or do you believe would help kind of in some ways solve some of these problems?
Well, just what any person at home can do is just kind of invite the women in their life to a game or just to play, not to, like, pressure them into playing just serious Magic, but, like, hey, do you want to play a game of Commander with us? Or just any sort of, like, interaction with gaming in general. Or, like, if you see, like, a woman at a game store, like, don't approach them, let them approach you, because I feel like a lot of women that come into stores, like, if they get kind of, like, crowded, or, like, people start the conversation out of nowhere, it might make them feel uncomfortable, even especially when they already felt uncomfortable walking in. Because I've seen sometimes, like,
a girl will walk in and they'll try to be in the community, and then some guy will just be kind of hovering too much or like being really like way too interested. And I kind of like, I can see that she's uncomfortable, and I'll go out and be like, kind of try to get like a group around her. Like, it's just kind of difficult to start off.
I feel you. Like, I've had to, for lack of a better word, like rescue somebody from those situations.
Yeah, I've done that a few times when I can clearly see that this person is uncomfortable, and I want to give them a good experience.
I had to rescue and my wife. I was with her, and like, dude didn't care.
Dude,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, just
like, some girls will just get ambushed.
That is awful. Like, here's the thing, too. I mean, as guys, one thing I will say that I know we can do is when you see these opportunities that, like, Vanessa's talking about, where you see a guy just not observing somebody's personal space or following a woman around the event, convention, game store, whatever, like, step in and tell the dude, like, hey, man, you might want to put some space between y'all. Yeah. Like, or, hey, she's obviously not interested. She's here to play games or whatever. Like,
yeah, like, ask her about her commander deck, not about her personal life.
Yeah, like, and here's the thing. Like, I'm not saying you can't ever find somebody you're interested in or whatever that happens to also play Magic, whatever. But that, understand, that's not their necessarily their first goal. They're there to play and be part of the community, just like the rest of us.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's, man, that is...
And also, being a streamer, have you had some of those issues where people just don't want to respect your time, you know, your personal time, your personal... I've heard some horror stories, like the most recent TwitchCon, for example, about...
Yeah, if, like, we're, like, my mods are pretty good about, like, if someone's there and just makes inappropriate, like, you can tell they're not there to, like, contribute, they're just there to, like, be weird, they'll just ban them. But, like, it's... A pet peeve of mine is when someone will comment on my looks and not on anything that's going on in the stream, and it kind of derails the conversation, and it's kind of makes kind of everyone feel uncomfortable, and it's just not the place for it.
I think this comes back to our earlier conversation. Like, if it's not something you would say to a guy you're watching stream, why would you say it to a woman that's streaming? Like, they just feel so weird and inappropriate. Like, you're there trying to entertain. You're there trying to be a personality. You're trying to have fun.
Like, yeah, especially with my content, it's geared towards competitive play. And I'm explaining, like, plays. And I'm, like, theorizing. And I'm kind of thinking of, like, the lines. And people are being like, well, maybe this, maybe that. And we're all trying to get better together and create, like, a learning atmosphere. And then it kind of gets, someone walks in and be like, hey, you're cute. And then they just kind of derails. And it's just, like... It's, come on, dude. Why?
I'm gonna grab people and be like, guy, what you're doing right now, has it ever worked for you? I mean, even one time.
Ever. Dude, it's funny you say that. Like, I've actually set, and this was a conversation I had maybe about a month ago. I was at a gathering of friends, and this came up with some of the women. And I even asked, like, at what point, like, none of us guys could identify it, but, like, for these guys that do this, this has to have worked some non-zero number of times, or else they wouldn't keep doing it, right? Or are they just, like, convinced that eventually it'll work? Like, because it's never something I would think is a usable tactic, but obviously enough of them think it is. Yeah, I guess so. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's weird that that's your starting point. Because the reality is, if you treat a woman like another human being, like an equal, and you invite them in and you're sharing deck advice, or, like, in your case, you're saying not just commenting on their looks while they're trying to have a serious stream or whatever, like, that's going to ingratiate you more to that person, that you're respecting them and their skills and their intelligence and everything else. Like, that's what they're there to share and be part of. Like, just be aware of that. Like, it's so crazy. Like, frustrating. Even as a guy, it's frustrating, and it's not even happening to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, it's something I do think about, you know, that how do we get more women of color particularly involved? Because I think even when we see women in Magic, a lot of times they just happen to be white women. You know, not that I have anything against that, but it's just like, how do we raise or even get people like you just in front of the community more often. So people say, hey, there is somebody like me, or like, hey, there is a woman of color that plays, or it's a safe space for her. Maybe it's also okay for me to participate. Because again, there are other communities that we know aren't as friendly or aren't as accepting. And if they experience that, we need to let them know that, like, hey, Magic does have these safe spots, that these are fun and these are things you can go do. And it's not like this other group.
Vanessa, have you ever had any peer pressure, you know, or people are like, you know, why are you going to the comic shop? What are you hanging out there for?
Yeah, like, it's, I feel like, well, my upbringing, like, my parents are both from Mexico, and they're both from a very, like, old school, rural, like, rancho, like, out up in the mountains kind of Mexico, where it's very old school. And growing up, and I like nerdy things and like card games, and they're like, they would always pressure me to stop playing. Like, my family hated me playing cards, and like, just anything that had to do with not typical female things, they would just not like it. Just very recently, like, my parents have like been proud of what I do and my hobbies and stuff, but just like my teenage years, they would kind of like not support me at all. I would be trying to go to card stores and they'd tell me like, no, why are you going out? Like, that's not for you. And I kind of had to fight those attitudes all the time growing up.
Did they tell you why they thought that wasn't what you should be doing, or?
Well, my dad would be like, you don't even know how to cook. Why are you going outside?
Wow.
Like, you don't have the necessary abilities to be a woman, and this is derailing your life path, basically.
So he's old school to the point that, like, your goal should have been to, I guess, learn skills to capture a man. Effectively.
Yeah, so he's like, well, you don't know how to clean, and you don't know how to cook, and he was being, like, serious about it. Like, he honestly thought that this was going to hinder my future. So it was a struggle.
Well, I can say I can only relate to half of that, you know, that, and we've touched on this too. I think some of it is cultural. When you're a person of color, there's a lot of things that go on and that are taught to you to, I guess, just take a path of success and be better. And sometimes your elders are just telling you things that, like, I know this works. This other path, I don't know what this is, and if you can even make a living or whatever doing it, so don't waste your time. Like, do this other thing. And I think we kind of sometimes have to push against that and go our own way and then prove to them. You know, I've had people in my family that were like, oh, you make such good grades, you're going to be a doctor, you're going to be a lawyer. And I'm like, I don't want to go to school for 12 years and do internships and whatever, right? But I found other things that were interesting. And I still remember a point where I had family come visit. I was running a big Magic event at a convention, and they came in and just stood there and they looked around and literally just went, so all these people play games and they paid you to be here. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, well, okay. Like, and that was it, right? They didn't process what was even happening.
Yeah, it's most of my life, my parents haven't been supportive at all of, like, me being, like, super obsessed with card games and devoting most of my time to just card game-related things, like working there and content creation and all of that. But only within the last year have they really seen what I do as legitimate. And I think it's mostly because of, like, I started earning money because of it. And they're like, oh, well, this is a legitimate path. But they don't really understand it, but I think they are more accepting now, especially because of the esports, like, prize money from Wizards, and then, like, they see that I'm earning an income from streaming, and this last weekend, I placed at a big cash tournament, and I was like, oh, yeah, I won this money, Mom, and she's like, oh, that's cool. So I feel like the money legitimized them.
Yeah.
Legitimized me in their eyes, which is kind of sad, but I think
no,
it's the truth.
But it's a good point. I think, again, this comes back to, like, they're just trying to figure out, they want to see you take a path that leads to success, because we talk about how much people of color struggled and all the things we have to overcome. And I mean, in their heart of hearts, they want the best for you, but they don't know what the best is sometimes, or what's even available and what your options are. You know, one of the things I've told somebody recently is, we're so ingrained, at least I don't know about Hispanic culture, but I know in the Black community, especially as a guy growing up, like, and Brian maybe can attest to this, that just about every Black guy I know at some point, you know how to wear a suit, tie a tie, press and or starch a pair of pants and or cut your own hair or somebody else's hair. Like, those are skills that every black guy picks up somewhere along the way, right? And it's, yeah, exactly. Tell me I'm wrong, you know, but it's.
I'm bad with hair, but the rest of that, yeah. I don't do my own hair ever, but yeah. Rest
you
of
have
that,
to learn that,
yeah,
because you're taught from your grandparents and your parents that you have to know these things so you can present better, yeah, and you can get that better opportunity that other people may have easier. You know, and I think sometimes over time, it's like, well, we also have to show people of that culture that here are other opportunities. And here are already people of color in this space showing that it's an opportunity. You know, it's one of those things that doesn't get talked about much, you know, but it is a reality of things that happen. So I can totally see where you would have to have dealt with that from your parents until you start showing them that, like, no, this is a positive income stream, like, this is how I'm taking care of myself, and then they start going, like, oh, maybe there's a way there.
Yeah, so we grew up super poor, and then my parents grew up, like, even more dirt poor, out in, like, the middle of nowhere, Mexico. Like, oh, my mom's like, oh yeah, like, I sold a chicken, and, like, just straight up, like, crazy stuff. And, well, that's not really crazy, but just basically very rural upbringing. And then I grew up very poor, and just now recently my parents are in a better spot financially, and they always had an idea of, like, me doing better than them in terms of money, and I feel like they really wanted that for me. And they're seeing that maybe money isn't the most important thing. I told my mom, like, I'm really happy. I really like my job. I like what I do. And I feel like there's a career path here. And I'm getting a degree soon. And I feel like it ties in with what I do. And she's finally seeing that it's all clicking together for me. But she was very worried for me for a while.
And while chicken is a currency, may not be crazy to us. I mean, I had a friend who was a grandpa, was a minister, a country minister, and he got paid in chicken very often. It was like his second form of currency. First cash,
dude,
second
was chicken. You laugh, so. But I've got 6 chickens in my backyard that I get my eggs from, so I can't say anything.
Oh, that's awesome. No, yeah, I grew up with chickens as pets.
So, yeah, you know, I guess really the things we can sum up here are that, one, guys, stand up, be an ally to women of color, and just women in general. Like, if you see other guys getting out of line, go say something, go do something. And we're not saying you have to, like, really be rude or really have to be forceful, but just kind of, like, maybe the person isn't even aware that they're causing a problem.
To do it.
Yeah, step in and do something. And then the other is, when you have an opportunity, do your part to raise up some of these women of color, and again, maybe even just women in general, to let people see that they are also part of the community, that they're also doing something positive, that they're out there sharing cool skills and cosplay costumes and doing cool streams and whatever. So people see that, hey, there's other people like them that are also part of this too. As guys, we have plenty of examples. So, you know, let's bring up other people to make everybody equal. But with that, we're going to wrap it up. We're hitting about the 120 mark here. So, Vanessa, why don't you tell everybody how we can find you on social and any projects you have coming up or that you're working on?
So all my social media on Twitch, and, well, mostly Twitch, Twitter, and Instagram is what I use, all under Nessa Meow Meow, N-E-S-S-A Meow Meow. And currently I'm just still trying to achieve partner status on Twitch. So, I've been denied 9 times now, so I'm just really working hard on streaming.
Wait, what are they denying you for? Is it for a number of subscribers?
Well, so you can apply once you hit a certain mark, which is 75 average viewers concurrently, and I'm about at 150.
Oh, gosh.
But they look at it as like a job application, and if they see you as a profitable asset, they invite you into their partner program. And for some reason, I'm not sure why, but they keep telling me no for about a year.
And I'll be honest, all right, I don't think I know anybody that's gotten it first try out of all the people I know.
I'm just saying, friends, listeners, you know what to do. Go over to our stream, subscribe or like and follow, and then go tell people on Twitch, like, hey, here's this person you should probably give partner status to.
Yeah, just check it out. leave a follow. If you can, stop by a little bit, check it out. It'd really help me out. Just my main goal right now is getting partnered on Twitch. So I'm focusing a lot on Twitch streaming. And my next event is going to be GP Portland in December. All right.
Sweet. Brian, where can we find you?
I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. I am not partnered either, and I'm not as close as this is yet. So the partner push has not started yet, but by all means, follow me on those places.
And as usual, I am at Power Dragon, PowerDragn, just about everywhere. Easy to find. If not, you can find me by my name. Also, I'm going to be streaming a bit more here in the next couple weeks because I have a little free time coming up. And I have a stack of codes for the Planeswalker decks from the last few sets. So if you want to get your hands on some free cards in Arena, come look for me over on Twitch, and I will be giving some codes out. So
are co-podcasters eligible? Probably not.
You are eligible. So what? Yeah, I'll have plenty of stuff to share. But yeah, that was a fun episode. I want to say thanks again to Vanessa for coming and hanging out with us. That was a fun conversation.
It was.
I am glad you took time.
Welcome. Yeah, I had a lot of fun too.
And on behalf of myself and Brian, I would like to say thanks to everybody for listening. Again, if you can, just get one more listener that you can share this podcast with and help us grow as usual. And wherever you're listening, whenever you're listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. We'd love it if you could follow us at patreon.com/colorofmagic. We're also on Facebook and Twitter under Color of Magic. You can go to our website and see blogs and updates at colorofmtg.com. We also ask if you could share this podcast with your friends. We can be found on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and Podbean. Every little bit helps. And again, thanks for your support.